Right, then to week four. This is week four. So we're looking at the Veda and the Tetrad again. And so this week I want to look at the actual words of the actual four stages of the Veda and the Tetrad. So last week we were looking at Veda more generally, more generically, and also kind of revisiting the body tetrad, the first tetrad, but with a focus, with an orientation on looking at the feeling terms of experience. So the second tetrad is sort of talking about particular vedanas, particular experiences. And it's also talking about the mind as the sort of home of feelings and emotions. So the particular vedanas that it's referring to are what are called factors of concentration, or dhyana factors. So I'll say a bit about what the dhyana factors are as a full set of five, and then we'll look more particularly at the two vedana ones. So they start with this a sort of effective engagement with practice. So the first factor is vitaka, which is bringing to mind or turning one's attention towards. So it's that sort of agility of mind, that ability of awareness to move to a new centre of attention. And then vitaka, which I'm translating as bearing in mind or keeping one's attention on, attending to, is the ability of mind, the ability of awareness to stay with, to investigate, to turn over, to engage with. So that's sort of the first two factors of concentration, and that's sort of something we can do. And then on the basis of that, on the basis of engaging effectively with that experience, then there's a sort of gathering, and as there's a gathering, there's a couple of very positive sort of feeling tones that arise. So physically, there's this factor called priti, which is physical pleasure, satisfaction, contentment, all the way through to something more like rapture or ecstasy. So as I said last week, I believe, it's not just 3 points, vedana. It's not just unpleasant, neutral, positive. It's a whole spectrum. So priti is a positive, pleasurable, physical vedana, and there's this whole spectrum. So sukha, the next one, is a sort of pleasurable state of mind, pleasurable vedana in the mind or the state of mind. And again, there's a whole spectrum which ranges from a sort of subtle contentment or happiness through enjoyment all the way to bliss, usually translated as bliss. And then finally, fifthly, there's ekagata, which stands for one-pointedness. Eka is one, gata is to go, as in gachami, I go. So when all factors are present, when all five factors are present, that's kind of indicating that we're moving into a state of concentration or absorption. And dhyana's the Pali word, Sanskrit word that just refers to the state of concentration or absorption. So that's a sort of map, and then there's our own experiences where we are at any point on the map. And it can be very helpful to just check our experience for something in particular. Yeah. So it's helpful to check at particular times whether these factors are present or not, and how we are experiencing if they're there, and also the effect that they're having on our state of mind. So just firstly, check if they're there. If they are, sort of how is that? How are we experiencing it? What's the sort of texture and nuance and signature of that experience? And then, okay, what's the effect of that? So always relating to our experience as kind of malleable and conditioned, flexible, sort of fluid and diverse conditioned experience that we're sort of seeing. And one point to make about the dhyana factor is it's not an on-off thing. It's not like normally we're in hindrance and we have no experience of dhyana factors, and then at a certain point we enter into first dhyana and all of a sudden we're experiencing all five. It's more gradual, they're more emergent. So that means it's quite possible for them to be there to some extent, you know, even if we recognise that there are still hindrances around, we're still not fully absorbed. So it's worth re-emphasising, this is a common refrain, but it's always worth re-emphasising, that we're not trying to have a particular experience, we're not trying to attain or manufacture or get into a particular state of mind. And we're sort of trying to let go of any particular fixed ideas about where we're trying to get to. It's much more about valuing, attending to, opening to what's actually there in our experience, rather than trying to get somewhere else. So we're just investigating our experience as it is, but we're looking for something in particular. Yeah. So it's a bit like choosing a particular focus. You're choosing a particular dimension of experience to investigate. Yeah. So this is there's a metaphor that I find quite helpful for this. It's like, imagine you've got a radar and you kind of tune your radar to a particular frequency, and then when you've got it on that frequency, you're just kind of having a look, you're sort of looking at the whole space, every now and again there's a blip, you think, oh yeah, there we go, a bit of pretty, and then there's another space, and then there's another blip, and so on. Or perhaps imagine an old-fashioned radio, one of those with an actual dial rather than buttons, and you're kind of tuning the dial and you're running up through frequency, and then at a certain point, oh yeah, there's a signal coming through, there's a bit of a, yeah, something recognisable happening. Yeah, so there's this quality of looking for something particular, tuning in, being patient, waiting, but also kind of recognising. So when there's something there, kind of recognising it. So recognition's a very helpful quality to bring into meditation, both on the positive side and the negative side. So in relation to hindrances, perhaps the most immediate and the most subtle way of working with hindrances is just recognition. It's like, oh yeah, it's that. Yeah, just recognising it. And recognition kind of brings awareness too. And with hindrances, that can tend to kind of take the energy out of them. With the more positive factors, with these dhyana factors, recognition can kind of engage with and encourage and sort of nurture. So there's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, in that it does take some time to kind of make the connection between the map, if you like, between these strange Pali Sanskrit words like pretty and sukha and your own actual experience. And obviously you need to have done that in order to recognise, oh yeah, this is sukhi, this is sukha, this is pretty, whatever. So it's a bit chicken and egg, but well, that's sort of the nature of meditation, really, just sort of to the extent you can relate the teaching to your experience, and then when you find the quality of resonance, it's like, oh yeah, I recognise this as pretty, for example, then there's more of a capacity for recognition. Okay, so in relation to not trying to attain or manufacture or get into a particular state, it's worth pointing out that there's a couple of ways in which we can kind of inadvertently undermine our practice. There's a couple of ways in which we can be a bit pushy or striving or a bit work orientated or a bit goal orientated that just kind of sabotage the practice really unintentionally. So the first of those is more volitional. It's through bringing an approach that's a bit forceful, that's a bit pushy, that's a bit willing. And the second of those is what you could call over-conceptualising. You've got a bit too much of an idea about where you're at and where you're going, and the idea is might be a bit fixed, but even if it's not, it's a bit abstract. So those of you who are familiar with the Dharma might recognize the two veils. There's the veil of kleshas, which is a sort of affective aspect of our experience, the emotional volitional aspect. So that sort of volitional quality includes forcing, willing, pushing, that's just a veil, an obscuration. And then there's the veil of views, Nyaya Varana, which is the sort of conceptualizing and relating to ideas rather than experience. So avoiding those two pitfalls, engaging with experience more directly, particularly the feeling tone of it, and bringing quality of patience. So we need to be patient with what's there. So the sort of, imagine it as like a gardener tending to flowers, or well, the other one that Prakashi brought in was the idea of a snail climbing the wall. You just kind of a little bit, just keep going. Okay, so let's go through these factors one at a time, more fully, and then we'll look at the stages. So the first two, vitaka and vichara, so they're often translated as initial thought and sustained thought. But in relation to the anapanasati, we're not actually doing a reflection practice, we're not doing a sort of thinking practice. We're doing a practice that's about developing attention. So the translation's bringing to mind, or turning one's attention to, and bearing in mind, or keeping one's attention on, is much more pertinent and much more relevant. And these are much more kind of, pertinent and relevant, important capacities to bring to meditation. So the thought, the sort of inner narrative that often kind of just accompanies experience, is not actually necessary. It's quite possible to investigate experience, to really look at it, and to sort of turn it over in your mind and see it from lots of different angles and get an understanding of it without thinking about it. So I suppose the point I'm making is that thought isn't necessary for investigation, and it tends to be more of a narrative. It's something that kind of goes along on its own as a description of what's happening, but it's not actually needed, as it's not an essential part of what we're doing. Okay. Having said that, I'd also like to say it's not helpful to try not to think. So that's an example of trying to have a different experience. So we're not trying to have a quiet inner experience of not thinking. All we're doing is choosing a particular centre of attention. Okay. And so it's quite possible, so we'd say we're just turning the mind to the breath, the physical experience of body breathing. It's quite possible to turn the attention to that, to turn it over in our mind, to investigate it, all quite independently of any sort of thinking process that might be going on. So just allow the thoughts to be there, but just recognise that they're just a narrative that's going on. They're not part of the practice, really. So broadly, in terms of the practice, we begin by investigating the duration, location, quality of the breath in the first tetrad, and through doing that, we're bringing to bear these qualities of vitaka, turning towards, vichaka, bearing in mind, turning over in the mind. And as a sort of fruition of the engagement with practice in that way, pleasant Vedanas of priti and sukha may well arise. It's a sort of natural spiral conditionality, really. If you engage, you kind of bring more of a full attention to bear, then a sort of enjoyable, positive feeling tone can naturally arise from that. So looking at the next one, priti, so this is physical pleasure, sensation, all the way to rapture, felt in the body, can be a sort of tingle, goosebumps, hairs. And one way of understanding this is that as tensions are released, a sort of energy is freed up and felt directly as a sort of stimulation, a sort of vibrant sensation. But it can begin with something a lot more subtle, a sort of physical well-being or sense of ease. And it can also have this quality of energy, but also of alertness, of lift, of poise, of vibrancy. So one place to look for pretty is in that quality in the posture, particularly the upper body posture of lift, poise, vibrancy, alertness. Another place to look for it is in the sort of more subtle sensations. If you bring your mind to the centre of your palms, for example, there's often quite a sort of subtle, vibrant tingling sort of energy to them. Same with the centres of the feet. And it takes a bit of sort of feeling into to sort of pick it up. So maybe that's also kind of worth remembering. It takes a bit of feeling into the experience to pick up the quality of pretty. So then sukha, happiness, enjoyment, bliss. This is a sort of pleasant feeling tone in the mind, in the state of mind, the content of mind, the mood. So it can begin with a sort of very gentle quality of lightness and ease or calm and soothing. But it's something that kind of runs quite deep. It's more of a deep current in the mind. It's not necessarily a sort of big experience. So the mind has a sort of surface which has its ups and downs, the sort of peaks and troughs, and the ups can be quite strong. Feeling emotional experiences, but it also has its kind of currents, its underneath, its depths, its currents. And sukha is more of a deep current experience in the mind. And so we might initially not recognise that it's there because we're quite accustomed to just attending to, being affected by noticing the ups and downs, the surface of our experience. So it's easy to miss, it's subtle, it's not dramatic, it can be very quiet. And again, there's this kind of chicken and egg thing that it's really helpful to recognise it, but initially it's quite easy to miss. So you're just sort of feeling your way into that. And so it takes a bit of patience to sort of get an initial kind of connection with it, but over time it's like there's a sort of more reinforcing effect that you're more familiar with it, you're more able to recognise it, so you know where to look, and so it's easier to kind of pick up, and then that recognition helps to sort of deepen into and stabilise. So a few words about pritti and sukha together, these sort of vedanas in the dhyana factors. So it's helpful to look for them and discover them and become more familiar with them in their sort of, particularly in their sort of emergent forms as they arise, as they develop. And they're very welcome qualities, they're very satisfying and enjoyable. And one of the reasons it's very helpful to kind of recognise them is that it's finding sense pleasure in our meditation experience. And that's helpful in loosening our sort of habitual dependence on external sources of sense pleasure. So when we meditate, we're kind of withdrawing from the world, including all sorts of sense pleasures that the world can offer us. And we're engaging more fully with our more inner experience. And if we can find the simple pleasures in that, that will just be really helpful in establishing a current of motivation. You know, if our whole association of meditation with is one of engaging with difficult and painful experience, then it's just going to undermine it. So one, again, reminder, re-emphasis. So vedana is just one cut through experience. It's a sort of feeling tone of experience. And in itself, it's quite a simple thing. and that's not intended to imply that experience is quite a single-toned or simple or unnuanced thing. So experience is very diverse, it's very rich, it's very variable. And Vedana, feeling tone, is just one direction, just one sort of cut to take through that. So we don't want to in any way deny the variety and richness and multi-dimensionality of experience, but at the same time we're noticing that it's actually useful to look for this in particular. Yeah. And then the final dhyana factor, ekagata, one-pointedness, literally one-pointedness of mind. Also sort of qualities of equipoise, even-mindedness, perhaps even equanimity. It's a sort of capacity to bring focus and attention to an object, to stay present, attend to our experience. So in this way, it's rather akin to vicharka, the sort of bearing in mind, but it's more integrated. So there's this quote of D.H. Lawrence, I think, man in his wholeness, wholly attending. So in a way, it's not just your attention that's bringing to bear, it's your kind of sense of wholeness. And you can see this as a sort of gathering of all of the other factors. And one little sort of visual description of that woke me up. So initially, my sense of the mind was it's like being on a sort of convex surface, and I might be able to sort of place my attention on the centre of that, and there it is, and it's sort of balanced, variously. But there's a tendency, there's a sort of pull away. So if I sort of just let go, then the mind will tend to roll off, and just fall away from the centre. So that's the sort of feeling for the shape of my awareness. It's in a way, just a way of saying a tendency towards being distracted. But it's sort of more like feeling the sort of shape of my awareness. Whereas later on, just through engaging with the practice, just through sort of establishing a more presence, it felt more like the mind was like that. So that if my attention had wandered off a bit, the pull, the directionality, was naturally back towards the centre. Yeah, so it might wobble around a bit, and it might sort of circle around the centre of attention, but basically it would come back. So this came to mind in relation to ekagata. I think ekagata is a sort of state of mind where the overall gravitation is back towards integration, towards the practice. So those are the dhyana factors. So I'll say something now about the stages. Stages 5, 6, 7 and 8 of the Anapanasati. And then we'll do a sort of more led meditation, perhaps a slightly shorter and more led meditation. We can have a tea break, and then we'll should have space afterwards for a more open meditation. I'll just introduce the stages as we do them. So in the Vedana Tetrad, stage 5, attentive to priti, I breathe in, attentive to priti, I breathe out. Yeah? Bhikkhus, one trains oneself, attentive to priti, I breathe in, one trains oneself, attentive to priti, I breathe out. So this is very akin in a way to the third stage, attentive to the whole body, because priti is a feeling tone experienced physically in the body. So similar, akin to stage 3, but this time particularly attending to the feeling tone of physical experience. And we're applying pitaka and vichara. We're turning the mind towards the body, permeated by the breath. We're bearing in mind that chosen centre of attention. Through doing that, we become more concentrated. And as we do, we just kind of opening the radar to priti, just sort of tuning our attention to this particular vedana, noticing when it's present, not worrying when it's not, being quite open and patient when it's not. So there's a sort of quality of patience, of inquisitiveness, of interest and engagement. Patiently looking for something particular. And so there's a parallel with certainly one valid approach to the metta bhavana here. So with the metta bhavana, one approach is to kind of tune the attention to that particular emotional experience. It's like you're kind of looking for metta and patiently inquiring. And if it's there, then that's great, you appreciate it. And if it's not, you just stay in this sort of open, receptive space of awareness, waiting. Yeah, looking. So that's pretty. And then stage six of the practice, because one trains oneself attentive to sukha, I breathe in. One trains oneself attentive to sukha, I breathe out. So that's very akin in a way to the fifth stage, but this time we're now particularly attentive to the feeling tone of the mind. You could say the mind-body, if you remember from, I think, the first week, we were talking about the different ways in which you can use this word body. So body can mean the sort of complete collection. So the mind in the sense of the complete collection of experiences and feelings, emotions, volitions, views. So that's the sort of sphere of the mind, the whole experience of the mind and mental activity. And tuning in particularly to feeling tone. So again, the approach is similar, where we're applying vitaka, turning the mind towards, okay, what's there in the mind-body, bearing that in mind, becoming more kind of engaged and concentrated and looking for the feeling tone. So all of that's very parallel to the fifth stage, looking for the feeling tone in the state of mind, within that, looking for sukha. So we're tuning the radar to this particular experience, noticing when it's present, appreciating that, not worrying when it's not, being patient with the space when it's not. So a few words about the mind or the mind-body. So perhaps we've got a sort of Western tendency to think of the mind as sort of separate, just different from the body, cut off and somewhere else as like a different place. But if the mind is anywhere, it's where our sense experience is. And our sense experience is in the body. So if I bring my attention, for example, to the sense experience in the sole of my foot, and I just sort of dwell in that sense experience, then my consciousness of that, if it's anywhere, is where that's happening. Okay. Where else would it be? What other location makes sense? So we can think of the body as where the mind is, as the mind is sort of enveloping, pervading the body. And we can also think of the body as the sort of home for feelings and emotions. So in Buddhism, we, just in terms of dividing up experience into six senses, when we come to the mind sense, we talk about mind objects, and we talk about feelings, emotions, intentions, views, thoughts. And they'll tend, well, particularly the feelings and emotions, they'll tend to have a home in the body. They'll tend to have a home. So there's all of, if you think of all the metaphors that we use for our emotional state, they're all drawing on parts of the body, for example. So perhaps the classic one is the heart. Open-hearted, closed-hearted, an aching heart, giving your heart away, that sort of thing. And I think that's not a coincidence. It's because actually when we do get in touch with a feeling, when we do get in touch with emotion, there's often somewhere there's a home for it in the body. So that's a few words about the mind, because in stage six, attending to sukha, we're looking for a feeling tone in the mind, but we're not looking for that somewhere else, as if it's somewhere else in the body. Okay, moving on to stage seven. So in the Pali, this is attending to the citta sankhara. A translation we usually give would be bhikkhus, attentive to the mind I breathe in, attentive to the mind I breathe out. So usually citta sankhara is just translated as mind, citta. So you may well remember stage three, attentive to the kaya sankhara, to the body sankhara. So again, mind sort of means conditioner, conditioned, and it's quite a subtle term, citta sankhara. It takes a bit of reflection as to what that's about. And here I just wanted to sort of suggest our conditioned state of mind as one way of looking at it. So we're relating to the mind, but we're not relating to the mind as a thing. Okay, just as in stage three we were relating to the body, but we weren't relating to the body as a thing. So think of body as like a pointer, and it's pointing towards the whole expanse of physical experience. Okay. So similarly, think of the word mind, citta, as a pointer, and it's pointing towards the whole expanse of mental experience. So that's the whole diverse variety of feelings, emotions, intentions, views, thoughts, that whole sphere of experience. So that's conditioned in the sense of being aggregate. So conditionality means two possible things, really. It means it's made up of bits, it means it's composite, it means it's diverse. That's one thing it can mean. And it can also mean it's arisen in dependence upon previous conditions. It's sort of changing over time. It's malleable, it's responsive, it's flexible, it's workable. It's not fixed and solid. Yeah. So just as that's true of the body, that's also true of the mind. And so we're relating to the mind that way. We're not relating to it as a thing, we're relating to it as a diverse body of experience, which is conditioned, which is hence changing, flexible, malleable, affected by condition. Now, in the context of the Anapanasati, the particular interpretation that particularly the later tradition gives you, so the sutta just gives you the seventh stage, in attentive to the mind condition, I believe in. The whole commentational tradition, it tends to sort of say, well, it's feelings that are the mind conditioner. Okay, here's the feelings tetrad, and we're attentive to citta sankhara, the mind conditioner. So they say, okay, well, it's obviously it must be feelings that are conditioning the mind. And that's certainly true. That's certainly true. It's certainly one of the things that conditions the mind. So it's worth looking particularly at the ways in which priti and sukha affect our state of mind. So priti has this quality of aliveness, and it can bring energy and zest to the mind. Sukha has this quality of tranquility and calm, and it can bring those into the mind. So these are the two dhyana factors, and they can have a very positive, possibly also a very subtle, but nonetheless a very positive effect. And they can lead to a couple of more qualities that I'm going to bring out. So these, in a way, these are two more dhyana factors, but they don't make it onto the list of five. So the first of them is what's called kamanatata. So this is karma, this is kama as in karma, but here it just means action. So amongst other things, karma just means action. So, kamanata-tara, it means kind of workable. So, karma could mean work, action. So, kamanata-tara means sort of workable, flexible, pliant, responsive, affected. But it doesn't mean floppy. Yeah? It doesn't mean all over the place. So there's a sort of flexibility and pliancy and responsiveness, but it's not slack or floppy. And the companion term, samahitata, means steadiness, firmness, groundedness, stability, but not rigid, not fixed. So the two often go together. Although in my own sense of my own experience, they do feel like distinct qualities. Sometimes I can sort of get a sense of one but not the other. Other people say, well, no, they're just two sides of the same coin. But the point is that these are kind of qualities. Again, they're qualities of concentration. They're qualities of a deepening into absorption. They're qualities that can easily or naturally arise as a consequence of engagement with practice, as a consequence of the qualities of pratti and sukha. And all of them are sort of leading in the same direction of samadhi, of concentration, of absorption, of dhyana. So, attentive to the mind conditioner, we're seeing the ways in which the mind is conditioned, and perhaps we're particularly also looking for that sort of positive direction towards dhyana, the way in which the mind can be encouraged in that direction. Then we've got one more, the eighth factor, calming the mind. I breathe in. Calming the mind, I breathe out. Okay? So, bhikkhus, one trains oneself, calming the mind, I breathe in. Calming the mind, I breathe out. And again, the term in there that's translated as mind is citta sankhara, the conditioned mind, the conditioning mind, a mind that's diverse, varied, and also flexible, impermanent, changing. Workable. So here again, we're moving from attending to calming. So there's very much a parallel with stages three and four, attending to the body conditioner, calming the body conditioner. Okay. Now this is more of a sort of allowing stage, allowing our experience of Vedana to be integrated, to be absorbed, to be assimilated. So, having effectively engaged with the earlier stages of the practice, we establish a momentum. Yeah? So, engaging effectively in meditation establishes a momentum. And then it's very helpful to just relax into the practice and allow that momentum to unfold. So, this is much more of a not doing than a doing. It's a relaxing into. So then there's parallels. This is quite a sort of central sort of feature of meditation in a way. There's this quality of establishing and quality of relaxing into. So you start with posture, you establish a posture, and then you relax into the posture. And then you engage with the practice. So in engaging with the practice, you're establishing the practice, and then you relax into the practice. So what is mindfulness in a way? You can say it's a sort of combination of a concentration and relaxation. It's attentive, but it's also relaxed. So one thing we're doing in the meditation is we're attending, we're concentrating. That's a more active angle, perhaps. And the other thing we're doing in meditation is we're relaxing, we're letting go. That's a more passive sort of quality to meditation. And so stages 7 and 8, again, bringing that dynamic in here, particularly in relation to the mind as conditioned by feelings. Yeah. So when we come to the relaxing, as I said, it's not something we think in terms of needing to do. So it's absorption, assimilation, integration, but it's not like I'm doing absorption, I'm doing assimilation, I'm doing integration. It's more we're just sort of allowing the space for them to happen. And yeah, just to reiterate, it's a very central facet of meditation. It's sort of got this quality of establishing, this quality of relaxing. Happens again and again at all sorts of different levels. And I think, as I said in the first week, it's like meditation, I'm sort of thinking of it in terms of finding one's way. An aspect of that is finding the sort of direction in experience. So you have to kind of come to what's immediate, what's actually happening now, and the real felt sense of that, rather than an abstraction of an idea. And there's the where I am. But along with that, there'll be a sense of direction, okay, a sense of possibility. And in each moment, there are really two directions. There's a sort of falling away or going more deeply into. And it's right there in the posture when you start the meditation. You sort of establish a posture, and then there's this possibility of dropping out of it, of just slumping. But there's also the possibility of relaxing into it. Yeah, so you keep the balance, but relax the muscles, and you relax into the quality of balance. And that's more subtle, but it's always there as a possibility. So here we are at stage 7 and 8, so we're kind of engaging with citta sankhara, establishing that where we're at, but along with the where we're at, there's a sort of direction. Yeah. There's a sort of direction into a sort of into the practice, which is into piti, sukha, absorption. And we can kind of relax into that. So every time we kind of do this, perhaps on more and more subtle levels, we start with the posture, and then we're looking at the physical awareness in stage 3 and 4, and now here we're looking at the quality of mind and feeling tone in stage 7 and 8. So three distinct stages, each of which are a little more subtle, but that basic approach of establishing the practice, finding that direction into the practice, and then relaxing in, is there in each stage. And if you can sort of pick it up at one stage, you can find the parallel at the next. Yeah. So if you can get the hang of doing that with posture, just something very straightforward like aligning the body, relaxing into the quality of balance, then you can find a parallel when you come to aware of the body as this kind of diverse space of physical experience, and then relaxing into that. And you can find the parallel from that with this quality in the mind. Yeah. So going all the way back to the first week of the series, that whole experiment with posture, establishing the posture, finding the sort of physical quality that's parallel. Yeah, so the body's kind of aligned, just mechanically. There's a physical quality of balance that's kind of akin with that. And then there's this quality in the mind that's the quality of balance, balanced attention, balanced awareness, balanced effort. That's kind of parallel with that. Yeah. So each of these stages, we're kind of finding the parallel. And if you can find the parallel quality, you can hopefully find the parallel way of relaxing in into that quality. Okay. So a bit of space for questions before we have a go, more of a led meditation and a tea break. So anything that was unclear, anything that was in your mind incomplete, or
I think there's just, because I'm quite tired today, so I'm probably not listening as well as I ought to be, but the distinction between priti and sukha, because they're both kind of happening in the body, but one's a body sensation and the other one's a mind quality. Is that correct?
Sort of. I mean, a simple way of putting it is Pretty's in the body, sukha's in the mind.
Yeah.
But the pitfall in that is our classic Western, yeah. you know, cutting off body from mind as if the mind's somewhere else.
Mm.
Well, where is the mind? You know, it permeates the body.
Mm.
But having said that, sukha's more. It's more in the awareness. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Mm.
So we've got a physical experience. We can have a tangible physical experience of pretty. We have a quality of awareness. That awareness can be very open, expansive, tender, and it can have its own feeling tone to it, which could be a tone of contentment or pleasure. So perhaps if you're looking, that's one way that's still embodied, you know, as opposed to alienated, is to see the space of physical experience as kind of within the space of awareness. And when we're looking at mind, you know, we're moving more towards the quality of the space of awareness.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, in these stages, I know we're tuning into our breath, posture and body in the beginning, and we're particularly trying to pick up on the pleasant aspects of feeling and in the body, rather than maybe overlooking unpleasant. Is that this? Because you only mentioned pretty and sukha.
Yeah.
So you're intentionally...
We're particularly tuning in to pretty and sukha.
Trying to find it.
And the opposites, you know, dukkha and whatever.
Yeah.
We're kind of acknowledging, allowing to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily overlook, you know, say overlooking. Mm-hmm. It's fully allowing, fully accepting mm-hmm. that they're there, sort of in the periphery, in the broad awareness. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But we're kind of keeping a perhaps an open space in the centre for pretty, mm-hmm. for example. So we're particularly tuning the attention to pretty. And if it's there, then we're really appreciating that. If it's not, we're sort of, the centre of attention is sort of this open space that's particularly tuned
mm-hmm.
to looking for that. Yeah.
Okay. Just sort of two hindrances that sort of come up, sort of when you feel like connection, rapture, or you might get that sudden tingle or breakout of energy or a vibration or whatever, and it's like, it's rapture. It's the grasping. So that can happen then.
Yeah.
And then the establishing and the relaxing, first couple of times I sort of really encountered that, was then really relaxing into that space is, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing the practice properly.
Okay. There's a view that because you've relaxed, you're not doing the practice properly or not.
Yeah, there was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's this, that's rapture, whatever. And then it's like this grasping will go in and then you kind of lose it. And I suppose...
I think that's an example, though, actually, of the way mind reactive can seem to fill the whole space of possibility with two bad options. You know? So, well, either I'm grasping after it, which is obviously not helpful, or I'm not grasping, which is just doing nothing, which is not so interpreted as, you know, I've stopped doing the practice, you know. So, what's the suggestion, though? I'd say just kind of recognise, acknowledge, you know.
Bring awareness to it and just kind of carry
on. But don't
on.
Buy it. In a way, you could see it as Myra as well, another way of looking at it. It's like, mind reactive can seem to fill the space of awareness with these two unhelpful options. And so a way of relating to that is, Myra is kind of telling me either that, you know, this isn't working because you're grasping, or this isn't working because you've given up, you know, sort of. You interpret not grasping as not doing the practice. there's a view, but it's not a right view. It's just a view that's going on.
You found your way through it then.
Yeah, by just sitting with more receptivity
and
just allowing and trying to drop the discursiveness going on. And
yeah, yeah.
Just tune back in.
And that can include allowing that voice or that view, you know, because allowing's got this quality of not identifying with. Okay.
Can you just say in one word again, just the sequence, just a sequence? So I suppose you start
those stages.
Posture, then.
Okay. What the whole sequence
just really,
to today?
Really, really simple. Just
okay. the whole Anapanasati up to as far as we've got.
Yeah. I know you've just done it in great detail. Mm. But,
okay.
Just to
try and keep it really, really. Short then. So after establishing the posture and relaxing to that, we're turning our attention to the breath, noticing its duration, quality. Then we're looking at the whole experience of the body, broadening out to the body, and then relaxing into that. Okay, so that's stages 1, 2, 3, and 4. Then in the Vedana tetrad, we're particularly tuning in to feeling tones, a physical, pleasurable feeling tone of pretty, the mental, pleasurable feeling tone of sukha, noticing how they're affecting the mind, the mind, broad sense of the mind, and then relaxing into that.
Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.